Hi there, welcome to NISA's podcast, The Unmentionables. I'm Mia Clark, co-founder of NISA, a new women's wellbeing company dedicated to supporting people through times of transformation. You might know us for our fourth wear postpartum recovery underwear, the first of its kind to enable you to insert an ice or heat pack directly into the garment to help with healing after vaginal or cesarean deliveries. We also offer solutions for those suffering from endometriosis or period pain, and we just released breast chest heating packs to help with discomfort related to engorgement during postpartum, as well as organic postpartum pads to pair with our fourth wear. And we are so thrilled to share that we're just about to release one of our most exciting innovations yet. It's our B-Vision Between Legs Self-Check Mirror. This is the first ever hands-free mirror designed especially for people to easily view their vulva and vagina to increase knowledge, support self-advocacy, encourage self-check, and also help with personal grooming and insertion of a tampon or a cup during your period. So check out our Instagram at NisaCare or nisacare.com for updates. While we launched our company in the postpartum space, there are so many other physical and emotional unmentionables that women face during the course of our lives. That's why we're opening up the aperture of this podcast for its second season, and we're talking about many other topics related to women's well-being. We're going to be speaking to leaders who are dedicated to unearthing unmentionables in their field. So, as you've probably heard, we've been talking about mental health, sexual well-being, menopause, endometriosis, and much more. Our guest today is Dr. Sam Duflo. She's a women's pelvic health and body expert, physiotherapist, and consultant. When Dr. Sam emerged as the leader in women's prenatal, maternal, and pelvic health, the paradigm for treatment of this niche just didn't exist in her city of Baltimore. She had to create it from the ground up. Sam retains a strong clinical practice through her own company, which is Indigo Physio, where she specializes in the treatment of complicated pelvic pain and dysfunction, particularly with prenatal and postpartum clients. Sam and I talked about everything from abdominal separation, pain with sex, and the stigmatization of lubrication, postpartum urinary incontinence, endometriosis, pelvic floor therapy for gender affirmation surgery, and what happens to your pelvic floor after birth, and much more. I chatted to Sam from her home in Baltimore.
So when I went to physical therapy school, I was very much interested in working with distance runners, but I had the opportunity to go to Malawi, which is a country in sub-Saharan Africa, and do HIV/AIDS research in mother-to-child transmission. And once I worked in the world of maternal health, I felt like there was no going back for me. There's something really gratifying and rewarding on an intrinsic level about working with the field of women's health and maternal health, both prenatally and postpartum and throughout the lifespan, because there are so many things that are not talked about, and you can make such a big difference in people's lives. So Mia, if you sprained your ankle, you could use crutches, you could use an elevator, you could talk about your experience sitting at the lunch table. If you have incontinence or pain with intercourse, those things just aren't talked about as much. So I have the opportunity working in this world to really change people's lives on a different level and help them reclaim that part of themselves.
Yeah. So it's not just the physical side of like, okay, how can I help them feel better? But it's like, how can I help them know that these things are much more common than one would necessarily know? And it's validating, and it's just opening up that conversation and getting them to just feel more comfortable talking about it.
And I think there's a wave happening because pelvic floor PTs are increasing in number. There's many different techniques. Everyone is getting out there and talking more about this in different ways. Many people that I see say to me, hey, I never knew this even existed. And we're trying to change that.
Do you think that Instagram has been a good vehicle for that? Because obviously, you know, through NISA, we follow a lot of pelvic floor members, but I have been really impressed by the conversation that's really happening, like from professionals, like sharing knowledge to a wider group, talking about those unmentionable things. And I'm just curious, like, have you had people reach out to you through Instagram and things like that? Or like, how are you seeing that conversation change culturally outside of, you know, just your professional sphere?
I think that Instagram, like most other elements of social media, is a vehicle for transmission of information. And so you can hit a wider audience that wouldn't normally have access to this information. So if somebody postpartum sees their medical practitioner or their midwife or birth assistant at 6 weeks or 10 weeks postpartum, if that person does not give them information on the resources that are available to them, and it goes beyond pelvic PT, we're talking lactation consultants, et cetera, then Instagram and other social media is a whole world of access that these things exist and are relevant for these different groups of people. So a postpartum mom might search a hashtag that is like postpartum exercises. And then suddenly they're sent through this like pelvic PT world of all of this different information about what's safe, what's not safe, what do pelvic PTs do? Is incontinence normal, and so forth. So I think Instagram has been wonderful in that way. The downside is that influencer does not equal expert. And so part of our job is to help people weed through what is valid, what is evidence-based, what's practical and individual care versus what's just pervasive normalization of certain things.
Yeah, it's really hard with social media, to your point, that those lines can just be so easily blurred, even if it was well-meaningly put out there, get some misinformation.
One of the things we hear all the time is people come to us and they say, well, I haven't done any crunches because I was worried I might have diastasis recti, which is abdominal separation. So in accessing the information that these things such as abdominal separation exist is also giving people... We don't want people to avoid all of these things. Like, not all crunches are bad. Not planks are not evil forever. And so helping people to not fear certain things and also to understand that there's treatment for this.
And then in your treatment with Indigo Physios, your company, it seems to be, you know, quite unique because you'll combine like body work with pelvic floor therapy as well. So you just explain a little bit more about how you kind of holistically see those modalities kind of working together.
So if you're looking at a person, a pelvic PT is just one kind of spoke or cog on a wheel. And there are many different aspects of self-care and care for that person through their lifespan that they might require. So the reason why I created Indigo in the way that it was because some people just might need pelvic PT for a very brief amount of time, but seeing other forms of body work can be really healing for a long period of time. And then, so for example, somebody with something like endometriosis or postpartum would benefit from seeing a pelvic PT for a short amount of time, but could see our very specialized body workers that do different techniques to help work with those people throughout their lifetime. And people need human touch. I mean, we're seeing that in the pandemic right now. Like, people are desperate for connection, and connection and human touch is healing in so many different ways.
How have you found that continuing to sort of run your business through the pandemic as somebody who so much of your work would require you being hands-on and, you know, touching people? How have you navigated that?
Just the hurdle of being a small business owner in the pandemic has been challenging in itself, because there's so much to learn. And there's things that when you're not primarily on a virtual platform to learn from the ground up in a very quick amount of time, all of those different aspects, we feel like we've translated to virtual very well. There is so much that you can do virtually for pelvic floor physical therapy. It is really interesting. I have people that are standing up and showing me their abdomen, and we're talking about their mobility and scar tissue. We're not looking at people's genitals via a video camera or telehealth, but there is an incredible amount that you can do virtually, as well as part of it is just advising and counseling people on great ways to keep their body moving and active that are safe, that people feel comfortable with. A lot of people stopped going to the gym. They stopped going to the yoga studio or the bar class. So how do we take what you have at home and make your routine work for you? There's also a lot of people at home that are pregnant, that are very isolated, or immediately postpartum that are very isolated. So I actually think that virtual telehealth and how that's worked out during the pandemic is benefiting many populations, and we should have done it sooner. Not just myself and our practice, but physical therapy or physiotherapy as a profession having such easy access to virtual services and telehealth gives people that can't travel, that are in rural areas, that have lack of access to transportation, that are disabled, it gives all of these people really easy access to healthcare that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, that's a really great point. That's kind of taken me back to, you know, after I gave birth 3 years ago, I had to have physical therapy, like pelvic floor therapy, right away for like tearing and a broken tailbone. And I didn't drive at the time. And it was incredibly hard to get. I was living in the city of Chicago, but obviously it's a huge city, and I would have to go downtown. And my husband had already gone back to work. And it was just a night. I didn't do the full course that I should have done because it became too difficult to go to get downtown on a bus with a newborn in the middle of winter. I can see the benefit of having, you know, if I had just been able to do this at home, I would have stuck to it.
And so much of our job is education, especially postpartum, is education and helping people understand, okay, well, they should do this, but not this. Or in their particular circumstance, like even though they were told they can do A, maybe they should do B or consider this. And there's a lot of different factors. So I agree with you. Having lived in Chicago, I also understand the winters and the commute. And I cannot even imagine hopping on one of those buses. So you are a brave soul.
I'm curious, just generally, even outside of postpartum, what are some of those biggest unmentionables that you see in your field when it comes to women's pelvic health, just generally?
Pain with sex. I would say that's the biggest one. Culturally, for some reason, lubrication is stigmatized. Like it is considered like a weakness if a woman needs lubrication, or a man, or anybody that's participating in penetrative intercourse. And so there are a lot of reasons why people have pain with intercourse. And for some reason, it's been very normalized and people don't talk about it. They assume that that's just the way it's supposed to be because that's always been that way for them. And sex, whatever form of sex that you enjoy having, should not be painful.
Do people come to you with that issue, or is it something that they, you know, because it's something that, you know, maybe people find hard to talk about, that comes out, you know, maybe they come to see you for something else, but then it comes?
Both. There's a lot of reasons. For instance, if somebody is experiencing incontinence, the general thought is, well, it's weak, so you should be doing pelvic floor contractions, also known as Kegels. But it's also very widely known amongst the pelvic floor community that things can be weak if they're too tight. So we start asking people about their sexual experience, what kind of sex they enjoy, is it painful, do they experience tearing or dryness or pain with initial penetration or deep penetration, and we kind of delve into this. And then people start talking and they start opening up and you can put all of the different puzzle pieces together. We treat a lot of people that have endometriosis, and the research on that is starting to grow and it's becoming more profound in social media. People are talking about it a lot more, but many individuals that experience endometriosis have significant pain with penetration or intercourse. And so the talk is coming out, but a lot of people are posting on like Instagram, for instance, like, hey, this is endo and this is what it encompasses. And this is how you feel with like torrential periods and extreme pain. But not as many people are saying like, hey, I've never had pain-free sex.
And then for people listening, because you're right, like people, you know, thankfully are talking more about endometriosis, but for those who are listening who don't know, could you explain, you know, what it is and how pelvic floor therapy could, you know, potentially help somebody?
So endometriosis is a diagnosis by laparoscopic surgery only. It's like the gold standard for diagnosis. But some of the markers are very heavy periods, soaking through more than one pad or tampon every hour or so, having extreme pain. These are the people that are missing work or missing school during their menstrual cycle. They're having to take medications. They live by their heating pad, and very heavy flow. Sometimes there's irregularity to it. And endometriosis physiologically means that for some unknown reason, parts of the tissue that create the endometrial lining of your uterus that tissue that's supposed to grow during parts of your menstrual cycle and then shed during other parts is now in other places. So for instance, on your colon, on parts of your diaphragm, on your ovaries, your uterus, your appendix, the intralining called the peritoneum of your abdomen. And so then what happens if that tissue is abundant in different parts of your abdominal cavity, every time you go through a hormonal cycle, that tissue kind of like grows and recedes just like it does on the inside of your uterus. And that can be extremely painful for people. And there's a wide spectrum of how this presents.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think it has been so completely, you know, ignored, even though so many women suffer from this?
There are very large gender gaps in our healthcare system traditionally. And it was assumed that women with very heavy periods or that were having extreme pain with their periods, that they were either over-exaggerating or there were mental health issues or it was hysteria. And so now they're understanding from a medical standpoint that there are physiological reasons that this is happening. And so that can be treated. The other thing is that if you're 14 years old and you go to your OBGYN and you're experiencing very severe menstrual cramps and pain, one of the solutions at that point is to be put on birth control. So many people have endometriosis and don't even know the severity of it because birth control controls those hormonal cycles for many people. They don't know the severity of it until they go off birth control, maybe like 10 or 15 liters if they're changing their birth control regimen or if they're trying to conceive. And then it's like, pow.
I mean, that's just so devastating, isn't it? Because, you know, if you are coming off it to try to conceive, and endometriosis can have an impact on your, you know, ability to conceive. And yeah, it's just so devastating that you could potentially have something that's kind of kept on the down low for so long that you could have tackled earlier in your life if only you had known.
And there's not, and I'm not an MD, so there are different answers to that. So yes, it is unfortunate that it's masked in that way, but the push now is to assess teens that are having these extreme periods and assess them for endometriosis and have a greater clarity for that moving forward. As far as pelvic PT, we can't change the fact that somebody has endometriosis, but we can change how the body can respond and adapt to the endometriosis. And many people, they grip their abs, they grip their pelvic floor, they have low back pain, they don't take deep breaths. There's a lot of tissue restrictions, especially people post-surgically addressing scar tissue, retraining their pelvic floor to work appropriately. There's a whole barrel of things that we can do with people to help improve their quality of life and decrease their pain levels while they're going through their endometriosis journey.
And then if we go back to like birth and postpartum, could you explain what happens to your pelvic floor after somebody gives birth? Obviously, that's going to be different for everybody, but what would you say are some givens, whether you've given birth, you know, vaginally or through a cesarean?
So let's go to vaginal delivery first. So a vaginal delivery is when through your three layers of pelvic floor muscles, the baby descends, and then you could potentially have tearing or not. So if anything is torn or it's painful, then those muscles are not going to work in the same way that they were working before. And just like any other muscle group, they require retraining and healing. Scar tissue should be addressed. So common things that we see post-vaginal delivery are pelvic organ prolapse, incontinence, fecal incontinence, pain from tearing, broken tailbones, and just an overall general weakness or spasm of the pelvic floor. Post-C-section, many people are not allowed to do any lifting or physical activity for the first 12 weeks. So part of what people are kind of going into and expecting is that you're going to have core weakness, scar tissue, pain along the incision site, effects on your pelvic floor. Now, this isn't true for everybody. There are some people that walk out of delivery and you would never know that they had a baby and they rebound really well. Part of that's genetics. A big part of it is how you've prepared your body for birth from a physical standpoint. And another part is your support system and what your bandwidth looks like immediately postpartum to address some of these issues.
And for those who are pregnant or recently postpartum listening to this podcast, what would your ideal postpartum care plan be for people who are looking to have a positive recovery, you know, from a pelvic floor standpoint?
It starts prenatally. Go see a pelvic physical therapist, contact us, set up an appointment with somebody that you trust and that is very specialized in prenatal care for the pelvis, and learn how to push from a pelvic PT standpoint, learn how to best prepare the muscles of your pelvic floor, not only from a strengthening standpoint, but also from a relaxation standpoint. Learn the best positions for laboring and delivering that help facilitate a decrease in potential chance for birth injury from a physical standpoint, what we're looking at. Then ideally, we want to see somebody around 6 to 10 weeks postpartum. That doesn't happen for everybody, and we can help people along the way regardless of when they show up. But ideally, 6 to 10 weeks postpartum, we assess pelvic floor, core, the whole physical from neck to toes, and then help people slowly get back on their feet and back to normal exercise.
I really believe that anyone who gives birth, even if you did have one of those slightly easier journeys that we, you know, just talked about, everyone should see a pelvic floor therapist.
I strongly believe that people should see a pelvic PT regardless if they're planning on having a child or not, because there's so much that women are not educated upon in basic health and anatomy that most people don't know how the urethra is different from the vaginal opening or where the clitoris is. And knowing your own anatomy is really empowering. There's also things that happen throughout the lifespan. Menopause, for instance, really affects your pelvic floor. The more people know about that and can understand their own body, the more they can advocate if something feels wrong to them.
Yep. How does menopause impact your pelvic floor, you know, whether you had a child or not?
What menopause by definition is when your body stops producing estrogen. So your ovaries and the different parts of your brain that produce sex hormones, it's not producing estrogen, your estrogen is declining. Estrogen is what helps keep your pelvic floor lubricated, lush. We often describe it as like beefy muscle, and that will help with continence, that will help with pain-free sex. One of the ways that I describe this is that estrogen is what keeps the rainforest leafy and green. We want that. Without estrogen, you head towards fall or even winter. So estrogen really helps keep the health of that tissue amongst all of the other effects postmenopausally of lack of estrogen, which is bone density, muscle changes, etc. A lot of people will say that postmenopause, they feel dryness, they feel tearing, they experience some incontinence, some pelvic organ prolapse. So many of these things can be addressed by a visit with a pelvic PT and kind of learn more about this and the different ways to address it.
And what do you think needs to happen so that people understand how important it is?
It's a loaded question, but more things like this, more people tuning in and understanding, more conversations amongst people, shouting it from the rooftops, kind of breaking through barriers and helping all people understand that women's health is a priority throughout the lifespan. I mean, there are many countries that this is the norm postpartum, that everyone sees a pelvic PT post delivery, regardless of method of delivery. And that we should keep talking about it. We should keep the Instagram posts, the podcasts, the articles, the book resources, so that more and more information is disseminated and then people start demanding that care.
Yeah, agree. And right now, after somebody's given birth, does an OBGYN usually just refer somebody to a pelvic floor therapist if they have more extreme end trauma?
There's no good answer for that. In theory, we hope so, but not everyone does. And part of that is that pelvic PTs are trying to get in at the med school level to help train other practitioners about our services and what we offer and how specialized this niche is. So and networking locally with the professionals that care for people postpartum. And that doesn't just mean OBGYNs. There's mental health professionals, acupuncturists, body workers. That's really how it starts, is kind of from the ground up, is changing the culture of birth and how postpartum people are cared for. And then there's a trickle down effect of more people will seek those services.
You had a really great post recently on your Instagram about the importance of not normalizing postpartum incontinence. So could you say a little bit more about, you know, what you meant by that?
That was out of a reaction of seeing a very popular influencer who has several hundred thousand followers kind of in jest, joking about how she was running after her kids and leaking. It was totally harmless in what she was talking about, but I feel like that's what it's become, is it's so normalized that women are like, oh, well, like I pee a little when I laugh or when I go to Zumba class or when I do yoga, there's like a noise that comes out. And that isn't normal. If your hand was weak, Mia, and you couldn't bring a cup of coffee to your mouth and you went to your doctor and said like, my hand's weak, they wouldn't say like, oh, ignore it, just wear a pad. They would be like, wow, we need to fix this. We need to address this and strengthen these muscles. And your pelvic floor is a series of three different layers of muscles. It's really important to core control. And it's also very much related to your quality of life. So I think although the jokes and the memes are really funny and they play an important role in creating a solidarity amongst postpartum women, I also think that it creates normalization and we should stop normalizing postpartum incontinence. In so many cases, it is easy to address. And then there are cases that it's not easy to address. But if you had an ankle sprain or a quadriceps tendon tear, you would go to somebody to help you address that. And that's what we're trying to get through pelvic PT and incontinence.
There are some devices out there that are intended to help with postpartum incontinence. I'm just curious, like what your view is on those generally, or, you know, would you really recommend somebody to see?
I think it's always a spectrum. Many people that come to us are not doing a pelvic floor contraction correctly. They're not doing a Kegel correctly. And they've been doing them forever. And they're like, I've been doing a million Kegels and I don't understand why I still have incontinence. And then we just realize that they're not doing it correctly. So learning how to do one correctly is the first step. Then the great benefit of those devices is that it creates some autonomy and care. It creates accountability if you're filling in an app, and it's things that people feel like they can do at home. So it's a spectrum. There's nothing that's purely good and there's nothing that's purely bad. It's just how they work together. But I usually recommend that people see a pelvic PT first.
I'm curious, in terms of people who have had gender affirmation surgeries, is that something that's talked about much in your field?
Yeah, so all of our PTs are gender aware and have taken very extensive training and working with individuals that are undergoing affirmation surgeries, whether it's top surgery, bottom surgery. It's a growing field and specialty amongst pelvic PT. And I think it's also important to recognize that some people do not undergo surgeries and that they do not identify in the black and white male-female gender norms that we traditionally as a society have adhered to, and those people are birthing too, and they need care too. That's part of this, is continuing to educate that there's gestating people. And I am not the expert lived experience on that, but we're working really hard to try to create an inclusive pelvic PT atmosphere for all birthing persons.
How would you like to see the landscape of pelvic floor therapy? Like if we say 5 years from now, like what would be your ideal situation for this field?
I would love for there to be more specialized pelvic physical therapists. I would love to see all people postpartum seeing a pelvic PT. I'd also like pelvic floor contractions to kind of go down a notch. I see a lot of people that are doing so many Kegels or pelvic floor contractions, and it's not always the right answer. And I think that was the first step in realizing that there was something going on in women's health, is that everyone's like, yes, like this needs to be addressed. Incontinence should not be normal. And so everyone should be strengthening their pelvic floor. But we've taken it a little far, and I'd love to see that dialed back and have people look at all of the other components that build into a healthy pelvis and pelvic floor.
Yeah, I think that I've certainly been guilty of this at some point, you know, in my life as well, where, you know, you hear pelvic floor and you just associate it with the Kegel exercise. And that's kind of all, you know, and you're like, well, I'm doing my Kegels. But
it's so much more than
so much more to your point. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Is there anything that you'd like to add that we haven't touched on? Or
I felt like this was very well-rounded and it was nice to speak to you about this in general. Another thing that we do at Indigo, and I specialize in particular, is working with athletes postpartum. And that's something that has also been neglected, is that female athletes or pregnant athletes, postpartum athletes, have been told that, you know, okay, it's safe to do this, or at this point postpartum, you're cleared for exercise. And that's really gossamer and murky. And we're helping people to identify what does return to impact sports or heavy lifting look like? How does it affect your pelvic floor? What physiological changes have taken place during pregnancy and postpartum? And how can you elevate your performance at these high level events postpartum without harming yourself?
That's really interesting, because obviously they're using their bodies in a different way. Not most, you know, people who aren't athletes. And I can imagine that it needs a special attention.
And during the pandemic, a lot of people, the running industry is booming because people can just leave their house and go for a jog. And when you're postpartum, many people have a running stroller. So it's easy to put your 6-month-old in a running stroller and go for a jog for 30 minutes. You don't need to get a babysitter. And so how do we help people access those things without injuring themselves? And how do we specialize that to a body that's given birth? And what are the different implications from hormone levels to, are you breastfeeding or lactating, to what's your sleep like? What's your nutrient density like? Do we refer you to other professionals that work with this as well, like a nutritionist? And I think that looking at this is really important, and being mindful that people's bodies are all different.
Yeah.
And they should train differently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Well, thank you so much.
Mia, I'm so glad we got to do this. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for all the work that you're doing to help women. And where can people who are listening find out more about you?
So you can find us at Indigo Physio on Instagram or at www.indigophysio.com. And we'd love to hear from you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mia. It was great to talk to you and see you.
Thank you so much to Dr. Sam. You can learn more about her and Indigo Physio at indigophysio.com. That's IndigoPhysio.com, and on Instagram at Indigo Physio. Her Instagram account is so thoughtful and informative, so you should definitely check that out. And since we're on the subject of Instagram, come on over to NisaCare or join us at NisaCare.com. And if you're feeling generous, we'd be thrilled if you could please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps other people find us. Okay, stay well out there wherever you're listening from, and we will see you next time. The Unmentionables is produced by Robbie Haynes at Strange Magic Recording in Chicago, Illinois.